The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fornelli. That's Bud Elliott. That's Danny Cannell. I'm Chip Patterson. We are coming to you live 3 p.m. Eastern Time, as we do every single Monday. Upon further review, we'll get a chance to put our final stamp on the week that was, in this case, week 3. And we'll start to turn the page to the week 4 storylines that have our attention. A lot to get to, but we're going to begin with an interesting note, which I think sparked some bigger discussion, some topics that we were tossing around on the group chat as well. The note is that there are three teams at the top of the AP rankings who combined have made up a lot of the non-Alabama college football playoff spots, teams that we thought were going to be top five going into the season and maybe even just sort of carving out their own spot in the top five with Alabama and Georgia. Clemson, Oklahoma, and Ohio State all won in week 3. Congratulations. They all dropped in the new AP poll after said wins. For Clemson, it came after defeating Georgia Tech narrowly in a double lightning delay situation, down 3 spots to number 9. Ohio State dropped 1 spot after a very slow start, sparked an eventual win against Tulsa. They dropped from number 9 to number 10. And Oklahoma, after being way closer than anyone expected as a 22.5-point favorite, found itself in a 1-score game against Nebraska. They dropped from number 3 to number 4, Oregon taking over the new number 3 spot after beating Stony Brook. So Alabama 1, Georgia 2, Oregon at 3, Oklahoma 4, Iowa 5, Penn State with the big mover at 6, Texas A&M hanging tight at 7, Cincinnati hanging tight at 8, and then Clemson and Ohio State, as we just mentioned. So clearly there is a lot of confidence that is just that is being lost in Clemson, Oklahoma, and Ohio State. Stock prices are down. Of the three, are we at a buy low situation? Is there any one of these three that you feel like you can get ahead of the market and say, no, let's not quit on this team just yet?
There's one little note you left out, though. And it goes to the fact of how, like, these rankings are based on our own preseason expectations more than what we've seen. Like you mentioned, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma all won and dropped. Florida lost and stayed still. Mm-hmm. Because it surpassed expectations, whereas everybody thought Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Clemson would look better than they have. Therefore, we have to drop them below teams that, you know, I guess there are definitely arguments to be made to be ranked ahead of them, but are they just because they're overperforming what we expected, we inflate them? So it's always fun with these polls early in the season.
But there's something wrong with each of these teams, right? I mean, we can go with Ohio State's defense. We could go with Clemson's offense. And then for Oklahoma, I guess quarterback. I don't know where are we pinpointing all of our issues here. And do you think that they're fixable?
I think they are fixable.
Okay.
If I look at that game, Nebraska-Oklahoma, I think Oklahoma should have won by more. To be honest, just based on how it was played, success rate wise, they were a lot better on a down to down basis. Nebraska did get, you know, some breaks in that game, but also Oklahoma got some. I just think Oklahoma is a little bit better than they showed. To me, I think their defense has improved. I'm also not a huge Nebraska hater here, but the one thing that really stands out to me is the lack of explosive passes. And as you guys know, Tom is sort of a Spencer Rattler, short seller. He's just not buying at that price. I am short selling the entire class of 2019 quarterbacks. Like, let's plant our flag in this right now. This year's draft, all these guys who come out after just 3 years, I don't want him on my NFL team. Like, this is not the level of talent that we had in the 2018 signing class or the 2020 signing class. 2019, not very good. Rattler was the number one kid in that class. I don't think he would have been the number one quarterback in other years, personally. And I wonder if some of the hype on him is based on him being the number one QB recruit, which he was the best one out of that group, but that group just wasn't it, in my opinion, at the time. And still, I'm not seeing it a ton. If they can get some explosive pass plays fixed, which I think they will, it's Lincoln Riley. If I'm like, hey, guys, the fix is for them to hit more explosive pass plays, I have a hard time thinking they won't do that. And they did run the ball pretty effectively in this game. Teams will have to start respecting the run, even if they just drop everybody like Nebraska did. I think they can fix it.
Yeah, I have my own like explosive metric that's different from like what you find in SP Plus and other rankings. It's pretty much the same, but it's got some other things I put in there, just wrinkles of my own. Right now, to go to what you're saying, but in passing explosiveness, Oklahoma ranks 117th nationally. That's a problem. And that's, I mean, I don't know if it's just the plays that they're running, if it's Rattler, if it's the receivers. I'm not 100% sure what it is, but there are a whole lot of like underneath crossing routes that are going for like, you know, 6-7 yards, that kind of stuff. There aren't as many big plays as we're typically used to seeing from Oklahoma. Not as many deep shots, not as much yak as we've seen from Oklahoma receivers in recent years. And that's why these games are closer than we're used to seeing, because those were the plays that Oklahoma usually uses to pull away from teams. But now they're having to put together these really long drives, and it's like they're almost becoming this very weird kind of possession passing team where it's like they're controlling the clock with their passing game, and it's kind of confusing.
Of all these teams, you know who I'm buying? I'm buying Ohio State. I can get them the cheapest as far as odds to win the national championship. Yes. And I think they have the least amount of concern or easiest fix for what ails them. You did notice Kerry Coombs no longer calling the defensive plays on the defensive side of the ball for the Buckeyes. They're trying new things. So you would expect them to struggle somewhat, to have some guys out of position, to maybe have some missed assignments. The longer the season goes on, they can iron those out. They still have all that talent on the offensive side of the ball. C.J. Stroud has been pretty good. He's been, you know, a couple opportunities he's missed on or made a couple less than stellar throws, but they can carry. The offense can still carry this defense, much like they've done until they get things figured out. And by the way, they play Penn State, who looks like a much better opponent at home. They do have to go to Indiana, but that doesn't look like an insurmountable task now. They do have to go to Nebraska, win that one, Michigan State home. And in the last game of the year in Ann Arbor, like as good as Michigan's looked, I hope it's a great game. I'd still say right now, give me Ohio State. So of all these issues that you could fix and which one are the easiest, you know, fixable, I would say it's the Buckeyes for sure. Of all of them, though, like I keep hearing like, oh, and I'm guilty of this too. Wide open season. Oh, my goodness. This is going to be the greatest college football season we've seen. Like, do you really want to go out and pick somebody else from the Big 12? Do you really want to pick somebody else from the Big 10? Do you really want to say that Florida or Georgia is going to knock off Alabama? Like, I'm not ready to go there just yet.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, to your point, do you want to pick somebody else from Big 12? I bet Oklahoma minus 165 to win the Big 12 in the preseason. The current price is minus 225.
Yeah.
Oklahoma's odds to win the Big 12. Oklahoma's odds to win the Big 12 have gotten substantially better since the preseason, because Iowa State, surprised, they didn't actually take another step from the most magical season they've ever had, right? TCU looks a little bit vulnerable. Oklahoma State can't throw a forward pass. Kansas State's not going to do it with Will Howard at QB, even though they played better than I thought. Like, who else in the Big 12? If you really like West Virginia,
well, you did the defense. Texas.
Yeah.
And see, I feel like Texas can win that game. I don't think
you don't trust can
win all the rest of them.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of things that else that stand out for me in that game. Nebraska's touchdown drives were short, right? Like they averaged, I think, 55 yards. Oklahoma had to go a long way with their touchdown drives. They were always pinned back in their own, you know, their own end, which was tough. Oklahoma made that really nice pick with the one hand, but I felt like other than that, their secondary didn't play all that well, but the front got after Nebraska all day. I mean, 10 tackles for loss, but they have 5 sacks, another 4 hurries. That defensive line for Oklahoma is eating. I do. It's weird to say, but I trust Oklahoma's defensive line.
Are fans being fans, or is there some angle where entertaining a change at quarterback for Ohio State is a conversation that you would want to have?
There's no need to change the QB. Okay. CJ Stroud has not been the problem for Ohio State. He's playing perfectly fine. He's playing just as good as anybody behind him is going to play. Now, I wish CJ Stroud would maybe offer a little bit more in the run game. So maybe if you feel like there's a guy who can do that for you, consider it. But Ohio State's problem has not been offensive. It's been defensively. They haven't been able to get the ball. They haven't been able to get off the field often enough. They haven't created enough chaos. They haven't created enough tackles for loss or pressure on opposing quarterbacks. It's the same situation. And until that changes, they're going to be stuck in close games because it's going to be kind of like a Big 12 shootout. I know that they had a slower game. They didn't have a high scoring game offensively against Tulsa, but we've seen Tulsa do that to everybody since the start of last season. They're kind of a pain in the butt defensively. And, you know, Dan, your bud, you were mentioning the odds on Oklahoma. Like right now, Ohio State's 12-1 to win the national title at Caesars. That's a lot of value because I still think they're the best team in the Big Ten, and I still think they're probably going to get to the playoffs. So of these teams, I feel like Clemson is the one I have the most concern about, but there's the ACC factor where it's like I feel like they'd be somewhat mediocre for Clemson and still get through this ACC.
Do you think that getting through this ACC still has Clemson as like being the 12th best team in the country?
Yeah.
So like 11-1 Clemson shows up against North Carolina or Virginia Tech in Charlotte, wins by 17 points, 12-1 ACC champion. And we don't know how many losses everyone else is going to have or what the picture looks like, but it's going to be very easy for the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, which has gotten very comfortable and likes to stick to its routines. I think it'll have a hard time keeping that Clemson team out of the College Football Playoff. I also think that this Clemson offense is going to improve. I mean, they've been bad. I don't think that number one concern, which might not be fixable, offensive line. They're not deep. They have to run the same five guys out there, and they've got to go and hold up for 60 minutes. They don't have enough competitive depth. They are not healthy enough along the offensive line at this moment that they can get the kind of subs in there where those guys are not getting worn down. And when they get worn down, that means that DJ starts seeing a lot more pressure, and DJ Uiagalelei has not played well. That said, because I have seen the ceiling of what DJ Uiagalelei can do, albeit with a deeper offensive line and more experienced wide receivers, I'm not ready to totally sell stock very specifically in Clemson offensive coordinator Tony Elliott, who was targeted for SEC head coaching jobs in recent years, and I think is being challenged right now. I think he's probably challenging himself, and it sure seems as much with the way he's been talking to the media. But I just think that this is going to be a position where like little old Clemson gets to lean on its campy little songs and its pat you on the back, coach you up, love them up type ways. And I think that they're going to be a better team by the end of the year. I think that that offense, again, competitive depth along the offensive line, I don't know if you can fix, but I think the offensive effectiveness as a whole is something that can be fixed.
Can we go back
to Stroud for 1 second? What'd they lose to Georgia by? What'd they lose to Georgia by?
By a pick six.
Yeah. By a pick six. And do we think Georgia's good?
I don't think Georgia's offense was any good in that game, though, like based on who was out
there. I don't either. Yeah. But like if you need a resume boost, that's it. I mean, I think maybe we did our totals, our win totals on Clemson. I think all of us took under, right? From 11?
Yeah.
Because we all were like, we can't pick the game. Even if they beat Georgia, there's still that – there's that. What if that was their dud? Because they're good for one a year. Clemson is every single year. Maybe it just came a little bit earlier. That being said, I have more issues about the offense because I haven't loved the offensive scheme at Clemson for the past 5 years, even when Jeff Scott was calling them solo. Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence bailed out a lot of subpar play calling with their extreme athleticism. And this was my concern about DJ, was that he wasn't as mobile as those two guys. And I think you're starting to see his unwillingness to run in the run game, sometimes called runs, sometimes scrambles, starting to impact this offense. So now you're going to have to see Tony Elliott and the offensive staff adjust to a quarterback who's not as mobile, who is not right now processing as fast as those quarterbacks were, and it's starting to show up on the field. Now, the good news is they have all season long to fix it, you know, like, and they can probably go out there and win gross and have horrible performances, but there's not a test on this, on the calendar until the ACC championship game. And even that looks like, all right, is it going to be North Carolina again? It feels like they're back in the driver's seat. They put up a lot of offensive firepower, but I just feel like Clemson's still going to be there in the end of the season in that conversation. But man, how long before Dabo goes off, if he hasn't already, on the ACC isn't as bad as everybody thinks. This is college football. Everybody's going to go out and win every single week. Like, we're about to get one of those when people start asking, well, what's wrong with you guys? What's wrong? He's going to get tired of it. And maybe the team does too, and they start to respond. But they have not looked the part up to this point.
So the one thing I want to say on Stroud, by the way, is he did admit in the post game that he has a shoulder thing going on, which could have something to do with his willingness to run. If the shoulder gets worse, that's about the only reason I could really see them making a quarterback change. Tulsa played them basically like Arkansas played Ole Miss last year. They just dropped everybody and said, all right, run it on us if you can. And that's kind of how I think I would play Ohio State if I had Tulsa's personnel. And if I had personnel like a lot of the Big Ten teams that Ohio State will face. Not that I'm saying the Big Ten is Tulsa quality, but you guys get my point here. Yeah. Ohio State is offensively right now, they kind of live off haymakers. And so if you're preventing that explosive play over the top, you are challenging Stroud and those guys to be more precise. And he can throw the haymaker. They can get open deep against most defenses. But they gave Travion Henderson the ball a bunch of times, and that worked out great for them, obviously. But that's what Tulsa was kind of daring them to do. They weren't able to hit the ball over the top on Tulsa in basically how Ohio State played it, or how Tulsa played it. I'm interested to see how do better teams play them going forward, though.
Okay, so let's take those. We got a little bit of Clemson, a little bit of Oklahoma, a little bit of Ohio State. For the purposes of this next question, I want to group Alabama in there too, because those are the big four in terms of the college football playoff. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma, who have accounted for 20 of the 28 spots in the college football playoff so far in its 7-year existence. Throw those four out. Is Georgia just the easiest? Or let's go ahead and get them rolling. Who would you put money on to win the national championship after 3 weeks?
From a value perspective, or who do you think wins?
I think you got to say, let's start with who do you think wins? Not like looking for the dark horse where it could break that way. I want to go with likelihood first. Maybe you don't think Georgia's likely. Maybe you think that Oregon is more likely than Georgia when it comes to winning the national championship. I think that that's what we're looking for. Let's take those big four out and say, all right, who can win the national title if it's not coming from that group?
I think Georgia's the most likely and Oregon's the best value.
I think Georgia's easily the most likely from that group.
Anybody want to put any value on the Gators from what we saw?
No.
No.
Because
you don't think they can beat Georgia?
No. If Georgia doesn't get some guys back on offense, yes.
That was a really fast no.
I watched that game this morning, and I just do not believe that Florida can bend the edge on Georgia. Like it did on Alabama. Alabama lost setting the edge this weekend. Alabama's linebackers played poorly, and they didn't play very physical. I usually never see Bama linebackers try to jump around blocks like that. And Bama's young defensive front, they didn't win the battle up front against Florida. That's a group that I still think will win the national title if I had to pick one team, because I think they'll mature. I think they'll get some guys back, and I think in Tuscaloosa they have a pretty good track record of figuring stuff out. But I don't think Florida can do to Georgia's defense what it did to Bama's defense. It's a whole different level of guy up front they have right now in terms of talent and experience, I think.
I know everyone uses their own favorite stats for offense and defense, but just to keep it real dumbed down in terms of yards per play allowed and yards per play, Alabama ranks number 50 on offense and number 58 on defense. I guess the schedule that includes Miami and Florida, but still it's also something that you can look at that and understand that those are numbers that do back up the idea that this Alabama team has a lot of room to grow. But like you mentioned, Bud, I kind of feel like this is one of those like, yeah, they'll figure it out because that's what they do. They improve over time. And this, uh, this has been what Nick Saban was yelling about. We thought it was rat poison, but he was like, no, guys, like, we're not great. We could lose to Florida. He's been pointing it out the entire time. Georgia, Oregon, no one else.
Penn State. If they keep improving, could.
Yeah.
I would have Penn State over Oregon as far as teams that I think actually could get into a playoff and win it. I don't think either of them will. Oregon has the better path. Oregon deserves credit for going to the horseshoe and beating Ohio State. Ohio State also deserves a lot of blame for how they played defense that day. I mean, it was just the same wide open thing over and over again. They did not react to some of those short side looks, and their reactions to those 3-on-1 sets were just ridiculous over and over again. I still think Oregon will lose once or twice in Pac-12 play.
Yeah, I think Penn State's a good call because I do think that they've looked really good in every game that they've played. I think Sean Clifford he's improved. Like Mike Yurcich has clearly been good for Sean Clifford because he's making better throws. He's making throws that he didn't really make last year in that offense. And they're kind of asking of more from him too. They're like allowing him to make those throws. And it was like, I feel like last year there really wasn't much faith in him. The offensive line has been terrific pass blocking and giving him the time to make those throws. I still think they struggle running the ball, and that could be a problem for him against like a better defense. But no, Penn State, man, that's a really good football team. Like we all had high, like, I've been saying for the last year and a half, 2 years, you know, I says Penn State's a quarterback away. I still don't think they have an elite quarterback, but I think their quarterback has improved enough to make them in a year like this where teams are kind of looking a little shaky to start the season. They have to be up there. Like, where are they, fourth in the AP poll? I don't think any one of us had them being that high this quickly in the season, but I don't think any of us are going to argue against it either.
I mean, look, does Auburn have a better secondary than anybody they'll face in the Big Ten? I think so.
The way Ohio State's playing right now, yeah.
And they still went 28 of 32, and one of those incompletes was a Hail Mary before the half that got picked.
I mean, so Michigan has not played a passing offense yet.
And they won't this weekend either because they play Rutgers.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious. Like, that's Michigan is that team, right, that they're surging up there. We're not going to mention them to win the national championship in this conversation, but in terms of, like, teams that I have, like, over-adjusted on and just – really changed my expectations for the Wolverines are easy for us to jump on this because it's Michigan and it's like, you know, the Jim Harbaugh, you know, redemption. If he can get the Wolverines to the top of the Big Ten, like there's a lot of talk that makes it easy to lean into this narrative. But I also see it in the way that they've jumped up in the CBS Sports 130, the way that they've been soaring in the AP rankings. Power ratings across the board seem to be liking Michigan more and more. But I would pick Penn State over Michigan if I have to have a non-Ohio – if I have to make a non-Ohio State national title pick, I'm going Penn State ahead of Michigan.
I think Danny nailed it last week. I think Michigan is very much looking like the Harbaugh Stanford teams, but probably with more talent at receiver than those teams had.
Yep.
Wants to take a flyer on the second best team in the SEC West?
Arkansas?
No.
No.
That may be...
Although...
Ole Miss, they got a week off to Tuscaloosa. Like, take your flyer now. Take it now before it just... They win that game. Those odds are going to dramatically change. Watch out.
So I would rather have a Matt Corral Heisman ticket than an Ole Miss
Heisman favorite, by the way.
Ticket.
Yes. Yes, like I would concur with that. That is the safer play.
It's like the Texas thing, right? Where I do think that Ole Miss can beat Alabama, and my dummy, normie, you know, take is going to be like, it will happen. I'll money line sprinkle it. I'll take the Rebels and the points, and then I'll end up getting burned. But I think that Ole Miss is more likely to win that game than it is to also be able to avoid an upset in all the rest of its games.
What do you think the line will be on that game? It's not out yet, is it? Because the bye?
On Alabama and Ole Miss?
Ole Miss.
I would guess. Where's the game at?
14.
In Tuscaloosa.
Probably Bama 12.5.
So less than it was against Florida.
Yeah,
but so a tighter line at home. That's interesting. I was just curious to see what you guys thought it would be.
Well, but I think if Bama played Florida again this weekend, they would not be laying 2 touchdowns, right? Like your rankings have to adjust what we saw in the swamp. I also wonder, like, that Tulane game was so weird. We've seen some games with some of these CUSA teams. Man, UAB,
Hey, Tulane's in the American now.
Excuse me. All right. Some of these non-conference games, like, did Tulane look like they cared to be there at all? Like, they were so many just wide-ass open guys.
Oh, don't forget the lightning delay, too.
Okay, right. For Ole Miss.
Crazy. Like, the UCF-Boise game week one, Georgia Tech-Clemson, Ole Miss-Tulane. They had to go and sit on their hands on their phones for, like, hours before they finally got out there.
We need to figure out, like, the live betting lightning delay principle.
Like, I mean, Ole Miss wanted to be there. Matt Corral was like, this is how I'm going to, like, launch, become the Heisman favorite. 7 touchdowns, 700 yards of offense, and 41 first downs. It's like, let's go. Weather's clear. Time for Matt Corral to make himself some money.
By the way, on the Razorbacks, they had 2 starting offensive linemen leave that game Saturday and did not return. So Dalton Wagner and Ricky Stromberg, important guys if you're going to face that Texas A&M defensive line. And they get Georgia the week after. So the Cinderella slipper could be doing that.
Texas A&M's offensive line is banged up.
Yeah, but that's
why you have a Briles team tempo-wise and the total of 48. I mean, I think both sides are like, can we actually block these guys? Because tempo-wise, it's a dead over.
The good news for me, though, is if those guys are out and Arkansas loses those games, I could still make the argument that the only reason Arkansas lost those games was because they were missing 40% of their offensive line, and they're still the second best team in the SEC West. So everything's coming up me.
Coming up on the other side, it's time for a pun further review, which will be some of our first chance to hear from Bud and DK on important issues from week 3, put a bow on it, and turn the page to week 4, and looking at the potential path to the college football playoff, are you buying into what's happening at Cincinnati, BYU, Coastal, a spotlight on the group of 5? Next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
3 words were actually mentioned in the live chat, youtube.com/cover3, as we were doing our instant reaction on Saturday night. And it was not a pun further review or where is Danny, where is Bud? It was 3 words that we hadn't heard in quite some time.
We got an order for Danny, Knowles to go. We got an order for Danny, Knowles to go.
So we've got to bring back the Knowles to go. Everyone in the chat was like, we need our Seminoles update. After the Wake Forest win against Florida State, I know that we sometimes have to drag y'all here in a time where you don't want to talk about Florida State football. But before we turn the page on week 3, we've got to hear from Danny Cannell and Bud Elliott on where this Florida State team is and what the takeaways are moving forward following the Demon Deacons win.
I thought last year was going to be Mike Norvell's biggest coaching challenge of his career. I think it's going to be this year. Like, I think his biggest challenge is going to be 2 things. 1, keeping this team invested to get effort every single week. And then it's also at the same time maintaining his recruiting class and keep them from bailing on a program, which looks like it's coming apart at the seams. And then I feel like My job from the outside is to try to keep everybody from jumping off the Mike Norvell ship. And it's way too early to try to do that, but I've already seen, you know, some dissension out there from fans. What are we going to change? It has been said. I've seen that out there. You know, I think Booger said it on the ABC set. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, can we just slow down a little bit? We do not want to be having, you know, we do not want a rotating door of coaches going through Tallahassee. We can't afford it. It's not great for the program. Every time you do that, you set it back. I just think we massively overvalued the Notre Dame performance. And it was a great performance. But I'll go back to what I told you guys. I went and watched this team scrimmage and I looked around. I was like, where are all the guys? Where are the difference makers? Where's my first round talent on the defensive side of the ball? Where's my big receiver that just dominates that you can get the ball to no matter what the coverage is? You just get it in his way. They don't exist on this roster. And I don't want to crap on this roster too much because they are still out there putting a lot of work in, trying to get better. But this roster, it's better than 0-3. But it's not, oh, we should have been 8 or 9 wins. I mean, Vegas was right around the number 5-5. And that's why all of us were over, but barely over. It wasn't like we were saying a slam dunk. So I just think this is a foundational year for Mike Norvell that has taken some hits to that foundation. Now he's got to make sure he doesn't come crumbling down on him.
So, I mean, I thought 4-7 wins was the appropriate range for this team. Now they're down 4 offensive linemen. I think they'll win 2 games, right? Like we said in the preseason, we said it on Lockspot. Hey, check who's warming up. If Robert Scott doesn't play, if Smith doesn't play the center, bet Wake on the alternate line. It won't be close. Wake minus 10.5 plus 200. Easy money. Robert Scott didn't warm up. Smith didn't warm up. Kenny Dillingham today tried to take, I think, a lot of the blame. And was like, you know, they ran a lot more man coverage than zone coverage. And that's the, you know, the OC in the press conference. And I'm like, well, I think he's trying to take some of the blame here and not just say what the truth is, which is that FSU with these backup linemen, they can't block Wake Forest. If you can't block Wake Forest, there's a lot of other teams in that league that can't block. They will not win an ACC game if they don't get those guys back, period. Like, it'll be a 2 or 3 win season if they don't get those dudes back. Now, one got kicked, quit the team. One, you know, has a broken leg, so he's not going to come back this year. The center has a back issue, I believe, and the right tackle has an ankle issue. They actually kind of like the starters. Wedding. Yeah, right. And one's planning his wedding. Yeah. That guy actually had to play a lot this weekend. They had to use 4 different O-line combos in the game because the backup center also went down. Dillingham, the one thing he did say, though, and he's trying not to blame the players, he's like, look, they asked him, why don't you run the ball more? And he just said, well, we really couldn't block him. The only time we had run success was when they miskeyed us on some of those tosses. Miskeyed means like the defense screwed up, right? And they blew an assignment. This is definitely a personnel issue. Now, defense, the other thing he said, which was interesting to me, is he's like, well, they played a lot more man coverage than I expected they would play because they're typically a pretty heavy, you know, quarters and 3 team. Well, guess what? They probably looked and said, man, these FSU receivers suck. We can play man all day and put a spy on Travis when he's in there. And they won't get open. They tried to take a bunch of transfers to put a Band-Aid on this thing as a bridge thing. The reason why you take 12 transfers is because you look at the roster and you say, this roster kind of sucks, right? Otherwise, you don't take 12 transfers. That's what they did. I think that was something to read into there. Now, I actually think they could have gone bowling if they didn't get everybody hurt, but and also didn't blow the Jack State game, which I do put on Norvell and company. But ultimately, if they don't get those guys back, they're not going to block anybody. And they will win 2 or 3 games, period. Like, it's not – physically, they cannot hold up with these reserves. There's really not an option there. That's just kind of the hard truth of it. Recruiting, I'm shocked how well this class is sticking together. But they seem to be pretty tight. They have a lot of, like, really established relationships there. We'll see.
Did you see there
– again, I'm telling you guys, if Robert Scott and Smith do not play this weekend against Louisville, screw the minus 2.5, bet the minus 10.5 at plus 300. Like,
listen, and I'll tell you guys
you can play.
I'll tell y'all the same thing that
I told on the group text too.
No, listen. You don't want that in your life. I told people we've got Cover 3 listeners that I've been running into in person around Raleigh. And I told my man, he was like, no, listen, Norvell's coaching for his job. You got to take the Noles. And I said, dude, you don't want that in your life. You don't want to have a ticket on this game. It's hard enough for my friends who have emotional investment in Florida State Wake Forest. You don't need it. You don't need to add that to your day.
Oh, I wanted some tickets on this game and got them.
Okay. The some other upon further review, we didn't get much of a chance to talk about on the reaction pod. We didn't go real deep on USC, but it was a fascinating turn in a moment. It might end up being only a moment. It might end up being only a week. But for this USC football program, Clay Helton fired on a Monday. Dante Williams promoted to interim. They're going to Washington State. It is looking bad. The description, you know, you're seeing it come across from the reporters at the game. They say USC looks lifeless on both sides of the ball. Looked like they didn't come out with any kind of fire. Washington State leads 14-7 at halftime of that game. Keaton Slovis gets a little bit banged up. Jackson Dart comes in, and Jackson Dart had an absolutely tremendous game leading the second half comeback. Did throw two picks, but he also had four touchdowns to go with 391 yards. It's also another blown lead for Nick Rolovich, and that pile is starting to get large, even for a coach with a small sample size at Washington State. But for USC, you know, it seemed like there was a lot of emotion and a lot of positivity. Things flipped, if only for one game or one day. What do you make of Jackson Dart's performance? And all of a sudden, do you think that Dante Williams can do what interim coaches have done before at USC, which is be able to guide this team at least to a safe landing? Does that make sense? Like, I don't know what their ceiling is, but I think a safe landing is more possible than the bottom falling out than I necessarily thought after the Stanford game.
I don't know if you're mentioning safe landing on purpose or not, but I'm just thinking of that photo of USC's plane on the tarmac on Saturday that was tilted backwards. I mean, I think if you're USC and you're a USC fan, obviously winning 45-14 on the road after firing your coach, it's like, awesome, great. Jackson Dart threw for 391 yards, four touchdowns. He has awesome eye black. Like I said on the reaction show the other night, that's awesome. USC's back. They look really cool. But I'm not going to get over the top excited about it because, A, you mentioned it, I think Washington State's just a very bad football team. I don't expect much of the Cougars. So, like, yeah, you should be beating them by 30 when you're USC. And B, USC couldn't run the ball at all in that game. If you go back and look at the stats, they averaged 1.9 yards per carry against Wazoo. And part of the critique we've had over USC under Clay Helton is that they're not a physical football team. And for USC, the way that it's able to recruit and the way it should be able to play, it should be able to beat people up. It doesn't. It's too much finesse, not enough kind of power and strength when you need it. And until they start showing signs of being able to do that, I think that this is still a team that could win the Pac-12 South. I think it's still a team that could win 8-9 games maybe, but it's not going to be anything special no matter who they have. You know, no matter how inspiring the interim coach is going forward. If they can't run the ball and push people around, they're going to be the same USC they were under Clay Helton. It's just a question of the only exciting story is going to be, well, who are we going to hire to replace him?
As somebody with a UCLA 10-1 ticket in the Pac-12 South, I really sincerely hope they keep playing Slovis. Jackson Dart, from a physical standpoint, is light years better than Slovis. If he's already looking this good, you know, from a mental like processing standpoint, I didn't get to see him in person as a recruit, but his recruiting film was nasty. And physically, he's got the goods. His production at the high school level was also off the charts. He was somebody we rocketed up the rankings pretty late in the cycle as he just absolutely tore it up as a senior. I really hope USC sticks with Slovis. I think Jackson Dart is the goods.
He's got cool eye black.
I mean, aren't you just like, what do you, if you're Dot Dad's, the eye black was kind of cool. The Dante Williams deal, like, aren't you kind of like, man, if all the stuff hadn't have happened before with interim coaches and keeping them around, like, you're kind of just, I mean, it's stating the obvious, you're the lame duck, but what if he does rattle off some impressive wins? What if they're 10-2? You know, what if they pull off an upset?
I think he is given the opportunity to be retained by the next hire because of his role in recruiting. Even with a full staff, and especially I think him being promoted is looking towards trying to make sure that you can keep the class together as much as possible for the early signing day. And that's where if the new coach is announced in like December 4th or December 5th, I bet that there is some incentive provided to be able to keep him around so that you can try to keep that signing class together. Hmm.
But yeah, do you think there's a realistic chance that Jackson Dart does play over Keaton Slovis? That's a tough call to make.
I would play him over.
Yeah.
I'm just not a big Slovis guy.
I think, too, like with Helton being gone and a new guy in charge, it's a fresh start for everybody. Yeah. Like Helton might have felt some affinity or some loyalty to Slovis, but that doesn't mean this new staff has to.
We should also point out that Washington State is a smoking crater right now, right? If Rolovich's buyout isn't what it was, there's been like nothing good going on there. The recruiting is not looking good. I'm not saying he's going to be hot seated this year because I think there's financial concerns there as far as the buyout, but like I don't think that ends well there. I do want to see Dart against some better teams. Obviously, that the sample set of three quarters is really not. Not appropriate to make that judgment on, but physically, I don't think there's any doubt he's a better player. You know, he's a more talented player, not better than Slovis is.
What are Jackson Dart's Heisman odds right now? Let's take
open gym. Upon further review, what are some of the lingering notes that you are carrying with you moving forward into week four and beyond?
Bama not being very physical. I know we mentioned a little bit earlier in the show, but Bama on the edge, not very good right now. Not setting the edge. Backers were, I don't think they're used to having blockers come out to them. Bama usually gobbles those guys up, and your backers typically run free. But even then, they did not physically take on blocks very well. They were kind of bullied a little bit, and so that's something that's got to make Nick Saban, a defensive coach, pretty furious. Auburn passing game just not effective enough to go on the road and win big time games. Their run blocking looked better than it has in recent years. I'll give them that. What else here? UVA's run defense. Oh my God. Chip.
Sid.
I did not anticipate that. How many?
392 rushing yards, 198 of them coming from Ty Chandler.
13 rushes of 10 plus yards for UNC.
Yeah. And look, UVA put up a good chunk of points too, but being able to get a little bit of push on the offense, like Sam Howell is a huge part of this run game too. I mean, this is the second straight game that he's gone for 80, 90 yards rushing. I think that what Danny said earlier is true. That they have a loss against a division opponent. But if Virginia Tech starts to, and Virginia Tech also hasn't lost a conference game, so Virginia Tech is still technically in the driver's seat. But I think that what you saw from North Carolina against Virginia, especially the way that team responded going down, they blew the lead in the second quarter, end up down 28-24 at halftime, outscored Virginia significantly the rest of the way on the way to a 20-point win. So I think that plus 24 second half margin was something that I heard Josh Downs talking about it. I heard Jeremiah Gimmel, the senior linebacker, talking about it. I think that in that locker room, they said, okay, how good are we? And it was the how good are we moment. You like the way that they responded. I do think that North Carolina, you come out of it with a little bit more positivity that this is, in fact, it ain't one of the 10 best teams in the country, but you come out with confidence. This is probably one of the 20 best teams in the country.
Tackling in the state of Florida, not really a strength, I would say. UCF didn't tackle worth a damn starting on Friday night. Florida wins that game if their linebackers and safeties tackle somebody. It's not like Bama hit them over the top over and over and over again with just wide open guys deep, right? They hit some short intermediate stuff and broke some tackles and turned what should have been an 8-yard pass into a 30 or 40 yard pass. And several times down there in the red zone, like, what did Bama score on? They just flipped it out to the back, and McClellan just juked somebody out of their shoes. He wasn't even touched. I mean, it was not close. So tackling there, I don't know. Florida State in the fourth quarter tackled poorly. Other than that, it was mainly just the offense turning it over six times, which can be problematic. Miami didn't tackle worth a damn. This is something we pointed out in the Locks pod as well. Hey, Keontre Smith being out is bad. Miami already didn't like their linebackers. Keontre Smith being out for them is real problematic, but tackling in the state of Florida right now is not great.
It wasn't
Jake Haener is a god.
Yes.
Yes.
Were you guys up watching that on Saturday?
Hell yeah. Absolutely. You know I'm there. But
gutsiest performance of the year.
That was like movie kind of like, you know, you watch a football movie and it's like they always overplay, like, oh, he's hurt, he's playing through. That was what Jake Hader was doing out there. That was amazing. And you think back to the first game of the season against UConn when they're playing like 150 degree temperatures and he's having full body cramps and has to leave the game. And then he's playing on Saturday night and beating UCLA on the road in the Rose Bowl with like a broken hip for all I could tell of the way he was after he got crunched by two dudes at one time. I want a Jake Hayner jersey.
Yes.
Fresno, if you're listening, help me help that happen.
Which teams get ahead can throw on UCLA like Fresno did? Because UCLA's secondary kind of got exposed here too.
Jackson Dart, maybe.
Yeah.
But that's my concern.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think Utah can. Maybe Arizona State on a good day. I'm not all that optimistic. Colorado can't. Arizona can't.
Arizona State, I'm not buying.
No. Yeah, no.
Do you think
be a Washington fan right now? You're watching Jake Hader, who transferred to Fresno from Washington. You're watching him ball out in the Rose Bowl on a Saturday night, beating UCLA. And I mean, no offense to Dylan Morris, he's a freshman, he's young, he's got plenty of time to grow. But right now, he's completing like 57% of his passes, 7 yards attempt, 4 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. And you're watching Jake Hader put up, let's see, through 4 games, he's got 1,464 yards, completing 74% of his passes, 10 yards per attempt, 10 touchdowns, 1 interception.
And Tom, you forgot the other Jake, Jacob Sermon, Washington transfer, is not playing all that poorly at Central Michigan.
Can I get it out in front of something?
Yes. Yeah.
Because when we were doing the show on HQ before, I said if BYU went 3-0 to start the season, I was going to personally start the campaign that they should represent. They should play the Pac-12 South. They're the division winner of the Pac-12 South. But looking at the schedule, they have a real opportunity before them to kind of rattle, like to. And when we look at Cincinnati, we're like, you know, they play 2 Power 5 teams. You know, Indiana, you got to have Indiana be better. BYU, with what they've done already in beating Utah and Arizona State, Arizona's kind of one, no one thought that was going to happen. They still have Boise State on their schedule. They still have Baylor on their schedule from the Big 12. They have Washington State. They have Virginia. And then they finish off the season. I don't think it's crazy to think they could be undefeated with the road game against USC, the last game of the year, which would you talk about putting your stamp on a resume? I don't think it's that crazy to think that could happen.
I do.
From what we've seen with some of these teams, who's going to get them? Virginia?
I think
Bronco Mendenhall Bowl, the Bronco Bowl.
I think they'll lose 2 to 3 games. I think they finish
probably
10-2. This is a BYU team because the reason I had that Alabama stat earlier about just like a surprising team to find outside the top 50 in yards per play offense and yards per play defense, BYU's outside the top 80. Like it's one of these teams that has, like, you do give the Cougars so much credit for being able to figure out ways to win games. You get you know, high leverage moments of the games. You're the one that come out on top. Like, that is something that we do want to see out of good teams, but it's also having me, I'm getting a disconnect from jumping on the story of what this BYU team has done, beating 3 straight Pac-12 South opponents after we spent all offseason saying like, all right, BYU, you wait. Yeah. You wait until you have to start playing all these power conference teams. Then you're not going to look like such a darling. I think that it is, it's been a great start to the season. And I think that BYU is better than I thought, but I still think this is like a, you know, a top 30, top 40 kind of team so far that's probably going to finish 9-3.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, they're well coached, they play physical, and they're a good football team. I don't think they're the 15th best team in the country or wherever they're ranked right now, but they deserve to be there based on what they've done so far. But I mean, if we look at it, like I've talked about it, they beat Arizona. I think Arizona's terrible. They beat Utah, which seemed impressive at the time, but then Utah went and lost to San Diego State. So now I'm kind of questioning how good Utah is. And Arizona State, I've always felt, is like a 7-5 team anyway. So I think that BYU's gone out, it's beaten the teams it's supposed to beat. I think it's capable of beating a lot of those teams that you mentioned are still on its schedule. But I still, when I watch that team play, it's hard for me to think they're getting 10 wins.
I agree with that. You mentioned Utah, by the way. They finally benched Brewer.
Yeah.
And the spring game was very long ago.
Man, that's 15-15, the spring game.
Is it Rising? Every day. Cameron Rising, right?
Yeah, it's Cam Rising who was
through three touchdowns after
signed, the end of the game. He was an Oklahoma kid or a Texas kid? I'm trying to remember.
Where was he at?
I think it was Texas.
He was an OU legacy who signed with Texas. He's got some talent. Like it's not like they're going to somebody who has no arm or anything. He played pretty damn well for them in the final 10-15 minutes of that game and led them back to overtime, because Utah was pretty cooked before that. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll turn that around. You know, we'll see. BYU was outgained by Arizona State by a full yard per play at home. That's not really a great sign there. Passing wise, 50%. That's not great. I'm not saying they're smoke and mirrors. They're a lot better than I thought they were. I don't think there's a serious risk they go undefeated.
What about for Cincinnati?
Well, Indiana just keeps disappointing me. Like, I was doubting them. I just didn't think they'd be this bad. Are they in Miss Bowl territory?
They played great, though. And Michael Penix just kept doing Michael Penix things. Like,
he's not good.
It was just teasing. He was dealing the first half, like just dropping dimes, like pressure on him, just flipping it out there. And then he just kind of regressed to the mean. Like, you saw what Michael Penix really is. He's a highly volatile quarterback. Last year it didn't burn him. This year it did. You know, it has so far.
I do think that if Cincinnati's able to get by Notre Dame, I still think that based on what I've seen from Cincinnati and from other teams in the AAC, I still think UCF can get them. I think Tulane can get them at home.
Tom, you think UCF can get them without Dylan Gabriel? Because they play UCF.
Oh, God, that's right. October 6th. I just remembered that. No, I don't think they can. Well, I mean, let's see who the backup
is. It's in Cincy.
Yeah, I got to see the backup before I make that proclamation. But, I mean, I think SMU is a team that could beat Cincinnati. They've played really well. I think at the end of the year, we saw ECU beat Marshall this weekend. And that's a team I think that most of us were kind of like looking at as a team on the rise coming into this year. That's a team that by the end of the season could be pretty good. So I think Cincinnati's the best team in the American, but I don't think the gap between them and everybody else in that conference is as wide as the rankings suggest.
I think what's going to really hurt Cincy is, UCF losing to Louisville, UCF will probably lose at least one or two more games if Gabriel's out for a while, in addition to Cincy. So that's like an 8-4 team. Probably that's not a ranked opponent. UCF at 8-4 is not getting ranked. Indiana, they probably make a bowl, but I don't know. I mean, I think Western Kentucky will throw all over them this weekend, given what we saw Ritter do to that secondary. Navy has looked terrible. USF looks terrible. The schedule looks much easier than it did in the preseason. So I don't think the committee is going to look fondly upon that.
Is it Joey Gatewood time for UCF?
Apparently not. I think they're still going to use Gatewood as like the battering ram gimmick guy.
Well, Gus Malzahn does love himself some putt-putt. Great to see that he's got an option there. I look at Cincinnati two ways. Number one, you got off to an awful start. Played really, really poorly, and yet you still won by two touchdowns. I think that's something that you want to see out of teams when they go lay an egg on the road. They don't let the game get out of hand. They find ways to get back in it. I also think that Indiana gift wrapped a whole bunch of points for the team that has benefited from points off turnovers, also provided many, many points off turnovers in just a gift bag. Thanks for coming. Here's your little gift card at the door kind of situation. So I'm wary of Cincinnati's ability to win at Notre Dame. And I think that's where I'm going to stop my judgment so far, because if they do win, then I'll sort of recalibrate it. But I kind of think that they're going to lose to the Fighting Irish, and that's going to be it for our Cincinnati playoff push.
Yeah, well, there's no playoff push, guys.
Coastal Carolina, no playoff push.
No.
Bottom of the Sun Belt's bad. Upon further review, we're really excited about like Coastal Carolina and App State. Louisiana hasn't quite lived up to expectations, depending on where your expectations were, but Louisiana is still probably the third best team in that conference. And boy, it starts to take a drop off after that.
Yeah.
Its strength of schedule metrics are not going to be kind to Coastal Carolina. When they sit down there and they start running, they start getting fed strength of schedule, strength of record, all those things. The Chanticleers are going to find themselves, even with as bad as the bottom of the American is, I think they're going to find themselves at a big time disadvantage to a Cincinnati or a BYU when we're looking for those other spots. All right, what about week four storylines? What has your attention? We've got Wisconsin against Notre Dame in Soldier Field is one of the biggest games of the weekend. You know, we got that Texas A&M Arkansas game that Bud mentioned earlier. What really has your attention as we turn the page from week three to week four?
Well, the Notre Dame Wisconsin game, because I think that's going to be a game that tells me a lot about both teams, because Wisconsin has already got the loss to Penn State and it completely bullied the hell out of Eastern Michigan. But still, that is an offense that with Graham Mertz, he has not come close to living up to what he looked like in that very first time we saw him against Illinois. He has struggled. There's really no explosiveness to their passing game whatsoever. And this is going to be another tough defense that he's facing, kind of like he faced with Penn State. I want to see if that Wisconsin offense can finally do something against a good team. And then on the other side, Notre Dame has been kind of putzing around in all of its games with Florida State, with Toledo, last week at Purdue. I want to see if Notre Dame has an actual like extra gear, the kind of gear that we saw helped get it to the playoff two of the last 3 years, because so far this season, I'm yet to see it. Jack Cohn, I thought, played great in that game against Florida State. He's gone backwards since. And for him, this is like, you know, the Jack Cohn revenge game against Wisconsin. So I'm really interested in seeing that. So I think for me, that is what, as far as that game is concerned, that's what I'm looking to.
I'm interested in Baylor, Iowa State. I think that'll be pretty ugly. Baylor, I don't trust their offense still. Iowa State run defense, pretty damn good. That'll be kind of fun to watch. We already talked a little bit about Texas A&M and Arkansas. Kentucky is only 5.5 at South Carolina. Curious line. A lot of folks seem to think Kentucky's a lock there. I don't. But
So you don't think that's a short line. You think that's a fair line.
It's not something I'm rushing to bet Kentucky on. I'm not looking to go take South Carolina. I've just been a doubter of Kentucky's defense for a while here. So, I didn't really see anything in their near escape against Chattanooga over the weekend that would indicate one that got bet down like crazy. Clemson opened like 12.5. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for a 14. I didn't get a 14. I had to scramble to grab an 11.5 on NC State. That's down to like 9.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask. I was going to say, that seems like a game that will be very much up our alley as far as our interests, considering everything we've talked about with Clemson already, and then NC State just being one of those teams that we've been kind of like closing it. That's a really interesting game on Saturday afternoon.
Oh, NC State can win.
Yeah.
NC State can absolutely win, and it would be the biggest win in 8 or 9 years of Dave Doran being the head coach there. And it won't matter. Clemson could go 8-4 in 2021. But if NC State beats Clemson, I mean, do you remember when NC State had like a 32-yard field goal and missed? It was a game winner, but then it went to overtime and Clemson ended up winning in overtime. And then I think the next year, NC State got off to a little bit of an early first half lead. And then Clemson just hit the gas and was able to hold off NC State late. I might have the game flow of that one, but those two games in back-to-back seasons, I believe it's 15-16. That was the closest that the Wolfpack got to being able to nab their division rivals. I love that game. I absolutely am fascinated by that game, because one of the things that NC State does really, really well is being able to establish an advantage with their offensive line. They were not able to do that against Mississippi State, at least not with any kind of consistency. Clemson's defense is much better than Mississippi State. Not much better, but Clemson's defense is better than Mississippi State's defense. I just don't know if Clemson's offense is going to be able to fix this thing right away against an NC State defense that is missing a couple of its best players from when we were really high on them, Peyton Wilson being one of them at the linebacker position. But I don't know, man. I don't think that they're going to get blown out. I don't think that they're going to get blown off the ball at the point of attack against a Clemson offensive line that, as we mentioned, is right now only playing about five guys and trying to do their best to put it together with duct tape other than that.
So can we call this the cover three game of the week, NC State hosting Clemson?
Is it really the cover three game of the week, though? I need to do a little bit more digging just to see if there's not anything more like on the sicko landscape. I mean,
if we're a Georgia pod and we also like Vandy, that kind of has to also get consideration.
it's a podcast divided.
That's bled out in locks. We've got to do better.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bud and I had winning weeks. Bud and I rallied late.
Okay. Did I just finish with one?
You and Danny. Honestly, Bud and I, we were talking, you know, by ourselves off air. We're wondering if we need to cut you and Danny from the hot spot.
I mean, do you want to provide a full plethora of picks? Some will be winners, some will be losers. That is really empowering our audience to go and take things into their own hands.
Mm-hmm. I got one for you. A game that I'm not betting yet. I've been like the Michigan State guy on the pod. I, you know, did the clip. They're going to go to a bowl game, I think, and bet them against Miami and bet them against, you know, Northwestern. I'm not so sure that they're a lock to beat Nebraska.
Oh,
Nebraska's not that bad.
Yeah.
That to me was more about Michigan State being reasonably competent and Miami just looking like a mess.
Yeah. See, Chip, we were having that conversation late Saturday and we were talking about if I thought Purdue was better than Nebraska. That's part of the reason why I think Nebraska is better than the Illinois loss is obviously a terrible way to start the season as far as the narrative is concerned. But I think Nebraska is a better football team than we've seen in recent years.
Also, why can't Illinois beat Nebraska beat Purdue this weekend?
It can.
I think so, too.
David Bell currently in concussion protocol.
Especially if they go for it on fourth and short in the opponent territory late in the game while holding a touchdown lead. Speaking of Michigan State went for it on fourth and one at the 40, scored a touchdown, helped put the game away. Illinois punted, lost.
You would think being around Belichick would,
I just don't think Bielema's got a whole lot of confidence in his offensive line right now.
Two games that I'm just kind of waiting on a number that I think are going to absolutely shoot out. Wake UVA might shoot out. And I think Kent State, Maryland is sneaky going to be a shootout ahead here. The line keeps dropping a little bit. Think about who Maryland's played so far.
Oh, no. Just get a total play. Don't you get Kent State. Don't do that.
No, I'm not. I already bet Maryland. What I'm saying is, like, I think this has potential to have, like, 75 points scored in it.
I agree.
Maryland wants to finally get out and run. They've played Illinois and Iowa or
West Virginia.
Right. Like, two teams are not going to let you play super wide open. Kent State has literally played A&M and Iowa, two teams that definitely are not going to let you get out and run. This is like, you know, okay, team in the – yeah. Anyway, that could shoot it out. I'm excited to actually watch that.
Sicko. Love it. Absolutely love it.
Are we playing poll v. poll? Some of the people in the comment section said we promised them poll v. poll. I don't even look at the polls, so I should.
There's not a ton of discrepancy this week. Not like there was when six of the top 12 teams were all two spots apart. They're a little bit more in sync this time. You know, just, we try to hit
notes.
Yeah, we try to hit a good storyline from the rankings. Today it was that three teams who we considered among the best in the country and have been for the college football playoff era won and dropped. Confidence dropping in Clemson, Oklahoma, and Ohio State. Our thanks to all of you who tuned in live at youtube.com/cover3. Remember that you can always find the Cover 3 podcast wherever you get your podcasts or watch them again at youtube.com/cover3. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at BudElliott3. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.